across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
So nice to have you here on this Monday morning, April 29th, 2024. Yeah, it's going to be the month of May, just 48 hours away or so. Nice to have you here. We got a full boat. Look at this cast of characters that we've got here. Greg Bach, Dr. Kristen Lyerly, Selena Heller, Selena's cat, who you can hear with that little internal purring when all is quiet on the microphones. I'm like, we need to put that on a loop. It's very relaxing.
Hello, cat.
The cat is now taking up the full camera.
Just looking at me. Oh, with your cat energy.
And meteorologist Brittany Merlot is here as well. And, I mean, we're joined by others. There's Roger commenting on Facebook that his favorite Tommy James and the Shondell song is Three Times in Love. We hit several others on his 77th birthday. And, of course, we got Rob from Tigerton where he says, good morning from Tigerton. It's 43 degrees with rain. It was foggy before sunrise. Got 1.1 inches of rain since yesterday morning. Dale Earnhardt, his anniversary of his birthday, was his favorite NASCAR driver. This week's theme song is Supertramp's 1982 song, It's Raining Again. Oh, I like that. Yes, I remember that song very well. Brittany, we didn't get quite as much as some southern parts of the state where it was, it just seemed like to sit and spin and twirl. And Greg, did you get some of that rain?
Oh, I'm still getting that rain. It got rain on Friday, then it was just long enough on Saturday for me to mow my front lawn. And then yesterday, kaboom.
And it just, like I said earlier, you can just watch it literally getting greener out there by the hour, or the buds on various trees are just getting bigger by the hour. So this week, our theme is growth spurt, I guess, because of the rain.
Yes, I like that. It sure is. And we've got an active pattern as we head through this week, too. So right now, this morning, we are seeing some dense fog that is riding along a warm front. So yes, Greg probably knows, as he is sitting right there in some mid-60s this morning, it is only in the mid-30s into Superior, Wisconsin. So some huge temperature differences statewide, and that warm front's going to continue to lift north through today. So northern portions of the state that didn't get that warmth on Saturday, you are going to see some of that return today. We're going to climb to the mid to upper 60s. We're going to hold that today and tomorrow. We'll get a little spike into the 70s for midweek before more rain hits. So what we're expecting today is just some light rain still continuing in some spots this morning. The dense fog will clear on out of here by this afternoon. Right around lunch, it should be gone. It will hang on, though, closer to Lake Michigan. The Fox Valley, it is about a quarter of a mile right now visibility. So this afternoon, some clearing will take place, mostly cloudy skies, mid-60s, and some dry weather tomorrow, mostly sunny skies. So not too bad.
There's going to be so many people getting that lawnmower out as soon as it's dry enough and hoping that they get out before they have to like bale it, you know, instead of just cutting it because then it gets all clumpy.
All the clumps.
Kristen, you got four strong, healthy boys. Who's the lawnmower in the family?
You're so funny. I like mowing my lawn though, because I get to get outside and I just really enjoy that activity. So
that's true. I was the one that got the John Deere lawn tractor. I wanted it. I liked it. I enjoyed it. Once Sherry figured out that was like a peaceful hour where nobody was asking anything of her, I can't get that tractor back. That's her deal. Sometimes she'll mow 2-3 times a day just to get, you know, a little.
She's mowing right now, actually. She's in the back. Yeah.
She would ride that thing to Rice Lake for work if she could, you know, just to get a little peace and quiet. Brittany, thanks so much for the update. And my goodness, thankful that it wasn't anything like down in Oklahoma and Nebraska. Yes. Brittany, those were Hollywood-esque videos that we were seeing of these tornadoes.
They sure were. Was it an EF3? I think they rated it. It was pretty scary stuff. A couple deaths too.
No, oh
my gosh.
No. That was an F12. If there is that. I mean, it was, those were insane.
There
has been loss of life, but it could have been so much more. I'm glad we evaded that here, Brittany. All right. Thanks so much. Have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
You too. Thanks.
As mentioned, the daily newsletter from Up North News is out right now. One of the stories in there is how Racine just opened up a new coffee shop that employs people with special needs. It's called the Inclusive Bean. It gives employees real jobs with real responsibility. Many of the people who work there say they've been denied jobs or felt undervalued in the past. And so you can find a link there to a longer story about that and so much more. Head over to see our newsletter at upnorthnewswi.com. Kristen Lyerly still with us here, Selena Heller as well. Selena's going to tell us about working on a story about medical debt in just a moment. But I do have to ask first if anybody, because of all the rain over the weekend, did any comfort food baking or food prep? Kristen, you're on the road, so that wouldn't necessarily... You don't cook at all when you're on the road? Do you ever go to like the hotels and go, hey, do you have a kitchen here? I want to whip up a little something.
I have a little kitchen in my hotel room. So mm-hmm. I go to the grocery store and I buy things like tuna salad and like pre-made little things. Yeah, I mean, you can't eat out every single meal. Yeah. So I've got a process.
Agree to disagree.
I just say because yesterday just kind of had that comfort food feel to it, and I made my best lasagna yet. I'm just tweaking that recipe each time. Uh-huh. And
what makes it so special? What is that secret sauce?
Yeah.
Love.
Ricotta, cottage cheese. What's that?
It's cottage cheese instead of ricotta, and then it really is just the balance of it's crushed tomatoes and tomato sauce and tomato paste, and it really is about the ratio. And getting the flavor, and of course all the other spices that you put in there too. Selena, come on. Yes, and so that's come along very nicely. So it was totally a comfort food kind of weekend. Selena, what about you?
Well, we did a lot of baking because we have the school bake sale coming up, a big spaghetti dinner for the playground. We have to buy the playground at the elementary school. So bake sale central over here.
Oh, gosh. And you bake how many different things?
I think I'm going to limit it to four things.
You're going to limit it to four?
Yes. I have lots of ideas and they expect lots of cutesy things from us, so we have lots of cutesy things.
The cutesy things are the bake sale winners. It's got to have like appeal, visual appeal. It could taste terrible though. So
I want you to. You should step up your game though, because I've seen a couple times I think it's Netflix, the series Is It Cake, where they take cake and make it look like ordinary objects, and you literally can't tell if it's cake or not.
Those I like how you just told her to step up her game after she said she was going to limit herself to four baked goods.
Perhaps a poor choice of words on my part. But, yeah.
But did you hear about Pat's lasagna?
Yes.
I made a decent sandwich on Sunday, whatever.
You made what?
I made a decent sandwich. I was running around and working all weekend, so there was no... But Bridget made these amazing chicken skewers on Saturday. That were garlic and spicy and just
so like on the grill.
How does she do it? No, she made it on the stove. We haven't fired up the grill. That thing needs to be cleaned. So yeah, but that's a big project.
Same here. I did as well. Go out Saturday night. We went out to Albertville Tavern and got their ribs again. Ooh. Selena, have you been up to Albertville?
Yes, I love Albertville.
Oh, those ribs. And I'll tell you, an air fryer is the world's greatest invention for leftovers.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I mean, what an air fryer does to ribs or pizza or so many other things, if you don't have an air fryer, you got to get that for the leftovers. All right, now that we've worked up ourselves into an appetite, it's time to shift gears, see what story Selena's been working on for us. And Selena, one of our most popular posts is tracking, and we're not tracking weather, we're not tracking Santa, we're tracking hummingbirds on their way back to Wisconsin. What's that about?
It's crazy. So many people love their hummingbirds. They're coming back to Wisconsin. There's an interactive map. We've posted it. You can follow the hummingbirds where they have been sighted. In Wisconsin, our most popular hummingbirds are ruby-throated hummingbirds.
We should note that by sighted, they're sighted. It's not like those little tiny bands. Nobody's capturing these birds and putting little anchor bracelets on them or anything like that.
Sightings in their yard. Good. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes, and then they can kind of place it on there. So if you have hummingbird sightings, I think you can place it on there yourself. So, but people love their hummingbirds. We ask people What do you do to attract hummingbirds? And some of the things are salvia, plant salvia. And this is funny, you guys. One lady said hot lips salvia. That's what hers is called.
So, okay.
Hot lips. Yep. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the regular 1 cup sugar water to 1 cup sugar to 4 cups water. So just a sugar water combination for food. Plants like bee balm, columbine, lupin, trumpet vine, rhododendron. Have a bird bath. Have a red bird feeder because that's their favorite color. And then I have some fun facts for you guys. So
hit us up.
Ready? Okay. So this is a fun one. What's your guess? How many miles can a hummingbird travel in one day?
Depends on whether there's a good stiff wind.
How many miles can a hummingbird travel in one day?
23
miles. See, 23 so
miles.
We had the Eau Claire Marathon over the weekend. They would not have been able to make it. They're slackers. All right. Hit us with another.
Okay. During migration, a hummingbird's heart beats up to 1,260 times per minute.
That's, per minute.
Doctor, per that doesn't minute. Sound good.
Would not recommend in humans. No.
No. And its wings flap 15 to 80 times per second.
Wow.
I flew in and my arms are tired. So yeah, continue to follow the flight, the migration of the hummingbirds as they make their way back to Wisconsin, and see if I can get my hummingbird feeder to not become just a visiting point for all the ants in the neighborhood love the sugar water there. Celine's going to talk to us about her medical debt story in just a sec. First little sports here as we come up on 7:18 on this Monday morning. Not the world's best weekend for a couple of the big teams. The Brewers lost to the Yankees 15-5 after losing on Saturday to the Yankees 15-3. They did win on Friday, but this was the first series that they had dropped all season long. They opened up a 3-game homestand with the Tampa Bay Rays. Starting this evening, Bryce Wilson goes to the mound. The Indiana Pacers scored 22 three-pointers to beat the Milwaukee Bucks 126-113. They take a 3-1 lead in the first round. No Giannis, no Dame Lillard with injuries. Bobby Portis was ejected. Game 5 is tomorrow, 8:30, at the Fiserv Forum. Dr. Lyerly, as always on Mondays, thank you so much for being a part of things here, and we will be talking to you either later in the week or next Monday. Safe travels along the way.
Thank you. It's always fun kicking off our week together.
Yes, we appreciate that very much. Selena tells us more about stories she's working on for Up North News Radio, which you're hearing live from Lake Wasota on the Civic Media Radio Network. Back in just a bit. Carney Wilson, Wilson Phillips, is 56 years old today, along with all kinds of other birthdays, including Kristen's son, Abe. Again, wish him a happy birthday as well. Hey, don't forget, there's a full evening lineup here on Up North News, or on Civic Media, across the Civic Media Radio Network, which starts with Up North News Radio at 6 a.m. But then there's Busted Pencils that you hear at 6 o'clock every evening now. And that's followed by Nightlight with Pete Schwabe. That's on from 7 to 9 and followed by Native Roots Radio. After that, learn about all the Civic Media shows at civicmedia.us. So, Selena, as we've talked about, when we talk about healthcare, we've also often done it in a policy perspective, affordable healthcare, Medicaid expansion, coverage, and things like that. But we wanted to take a look beyond the care when the bill comes due. And whether that bill gets paid or not, why it doesn't get paid, and what we can do about it. What are you finding out about medical debt in Wisconsin and ways that it could be addressed so it doesn't drive up costs for all the rest of us?
Well, in Milwaukee County, I talked to Milwaukee County Supervisor Sean Rolland, who Milwaukee County got some ARPA funds, $1.6 million for the pandemic. And so they had to try to figure out what to do with this money. And they said, oh, okay, let's the most bang for our buck kind of a thing. How can we help this situation of medical debt? Because it's a problem, of course. So they had $1.53 million in medical debt across the county at that time. So, excuse me, what they did is decided to eliminate the debt that they had and help people kind of one-time shot, because that's kind of what the money was kind of intended for. So, but what they found out in doing this is that maybe they could make this a little more sustainable and a little bit better in the long run. And that's what they did. So they look to RIP medical debt, which eliminates medical debt across the country for people. And they look to their model of looking at credit reports, who is eligible. And they look to hospitals and said, you know, we would like to eliminate all the debt in your hospitals. But the hospital said, we have great charity care programs that we just really want to focus on and utilize those. So they kind of kept a conversation going between them and said, well, how come people aren't utilizing these programs and how can we fix that? So they said, let's streamline that process and make it easier for people to get that funding, to get that charity care a little easier. And that's what they did. So they looked at credit reports and said, okay, well, how about you just eliminate all those people who qualify instead of having to go through paperwork and turning in your tax documents and pay stubs and all of that business, which are barriers a lot of times for people, because it's a process to get qualified and get those through. So they wanted to make it easier. And that's what ended up happening. The hospitals kind of changed their policies and programs to make it more streamlined for people to get that qualifying paperwork through quicker. So
who are we going to hear from about this?
This is Sean Rolland, a Milwaukee County supervisor who is kind of the champion of this whole project. And he talks about kind of furthering this effort and making it a little bit broader for people to just kind of prevent medical debt from happening in the first place.
It's 2024. We have the technology that enables people to just automatically qualify people for programs. The other thing that's exciting to me is not just pre-qualifying people for charity care. To me, it's how do we use big data, like from credit reports or elsewhere, to pre-qualify people for all sorts of programs that they should be eligible for, but they are currently not participating in because they either didn't know it existed or didn't know the form or just thought that the process was so onerous they didn't have time to apply for it. To me, there's this huge opportunity for public officials to think through how do we use data to make it easier for people to get onto these programs that they are eligible for.
So, and to further that also, he to use what they did as an example across the state, he kind of wants to set that example, like have leaders of in the county talk with the medical providers and the hospitals and see how their charity care programs are given out and streamlining that process kind of all across the board while you have these conversations and make it easier for people.
We have an article going up on our website, upnorthnewswi.com, that notes that the Wisconsin Hospital Association found that uncompensated care in 2021 came to $1.3 billion, and another $1.3 billion in uncompensated healthcare services or charity care. So there's, we talk about medical debt, there's the two kinds. There's the kind that you're focused on, that people that are getting charity care, there's no expectation by the hospital that they're going to be able to pay for this based on their circumstances. But then there's also the uncompensated care where they do send bills to people that it would appear they should be able to pay, but then they don't pay. But it sounds, Selena, that it may be a case of you shouldn't have expected them to pay, but because, you know, we didn't use technology to its fullest, you would have learned that they actually qualify for some of these charity care programs instead.
Absolutely. Yes. These people qualify and they just don't know it. They don't, they're not aware of things, or it's just too daunting of a process. Like, we all know that feeling of having to fill out all sorts of paperwork and then gathering information and coming up with all of these things that you need to turn in. And that's what they want to help out with, because these people qualify. So get them that assistance that they need.
Right. I mean, we're talking about a problem that affects tens of millions of Americans, estimates of up to 15% of Americans, and that's hundreds of billions of dollars in healthcare costs, medical bills that aren't being paid, and they don't just go away. That cost then gets passed on, and private insurance companies and others, you know, pass that cost on to you or me and everybody else that pays our medical bills. So whenever I hear people from a political stripe saying, oh, we can't afford, you know, something like single payer health care, or, you know, something that all the other developed countries out there have, my retort has always been, we can't afford not to. We keep racking up all this debt, that medical debt that gets passed along to us, as opposed to just covering everybody to at least a certain degree. You know, other things would still be, you know, paid, certain electives and things like that. But I mean, as you've learned in this, this is a much more complex issue than it needs to be, and could be made better if people were having more discussions like what you report on in Milwaukee County.
Well, right. And it is about that debt prevention. Prevent it in the first place. It's hard that these programs like RAP, medical debt, have to get to the point that they do, and they go out and help people out and just eliminate it right off the top. But why do we even get to that point to begin with? How can we fix it?
Right. And there are other ways to fix it, which would include expanding Medicaid coverage. Medicaid would be could cover more working families, people who are working, but their company does not offer healthcare coverage. And while there is the Affordable Care Act, you know, the Obamacare exchange is an option, but even then, with those lower prices, that's still too daunting for some lower income working families. And so expanding Medicaid would get that done, but Republicans have resisted that in Wisconsin for over a decade, and it's only cost Wisconsin more and more. Selena Heller covers all this and more for us. Check out her stories at upnorthnewswi.com. Thanks, Selena.
Thank you.
All right. Congressional candidate Peter Barca joins us next. You're up north. Peter Barca is a familiar name to folks in southeast Wisconsin, having served both in the legislature and in the United States Congress, and then in the administration of Governor Tony Evers, and now as a candidate for Congress again in the 1st Congressional District. And he joins us now to talk about that decision to run in the district currently served by incumbent Republican Brian Steil. Peter Barca, good morning. Thanks for being here.
Good morning, Pat. Great to be with you.
Nice to have you here. Now, you were serving in the Revenue Department for Governor Evers, if I recall correctly.
That's right. It was a job I absolutely loved serving in, being the governor's cabinet and Department of Revenue. We touch, you know, every person in the state in one way or another, whether it's through the revenue side of the equation, whether it's through state and local finance, whether it's through being lottery players or alcohol and tobacco and gaming enforcement. It was just a terrific position, one that gave me a lot of wonderful opportunities to get things done. And we're very proud of our record there. We're able to cut taxes for millions of middle-class taxpayers, and we're able to get through new tools for law enforcement for alcohol and tobacco, and able to even do something about organ donation. We passed a bill, the last bill the governor signed, for the Department of Revenue, allowing people to donate organs to the tax system. So I know when we finished that, there were four people there from the UW organ donation, and they said, you know, Secretary Barker, you tell your staff, they literally will save hundreds, if not thousands, of lives through this new approach, because every week somebody unfortunately passes away in America for lack of an organ. So it was something that we were able to work together with businesses and nonprofit organizations and citizens throughout the state. And so, tough decision to give that up, because I truly enjoyed that type of service and you know, we administered most of the large COVID grants, and Wisconsin was number one in the nation, actually, for returning dollars to businesses and organizations and individuals. So tough decision to give it up, but this is very important. We have a do-nothing dysfunctional Congress, and unfortunately, Brian Stout is part of the problem, so that's why I'm running.
Tell me about the dynamic out there that you sense in Washington in national elections for the House, because I don't think you would be doing this if you didn't think the first district was competitive, if you didn't think the, you know, control of the House of Representatives was at stake, because it's been, what, 30 years since you served in Congress in that district before. So what are you seeing now that said you're the right guy at the right time?
Well, look, I have a reputation of working across the aisle and getting things done. You know, that's what's sadly missing in America. Today, people put their party and their partisan interests above their home state and their country, and it's wrong. And I sense people are extremely frustrated. They, you know, people talk endlessly about the problems, but they're not working together to get things done. And that's the dynamics that I see. And obviously, we have many issues confronting this country right now. There's so much that could be done to improve people's access to health care, quality of health care, people's ability to make ends meet. You know, people that are struggling to get in the middle class, even the middle class themselves are having trouble making ends meet. And there's things that can clearly be done about it. You know, there's been many provisions brought forward for Buy American. It's something I championed in the state legislature. And as a member of Congress, I had gotten a provision in the defense authorization bill that ships engines had to be made in America. And as a result, they brought back hundreds of people that were on layoff from the Fairbanks Morse plant, which was in my congressional district in Beloit. And they actually hired hundreds more. And, you know, things like that, getting rid of some of these disastrous trade deals that are making it harder for people. Those are all issues that, you know, can be tackled effectively if you have people of goodwill that are willing to roll up their sleeves and get things done and not just, play partisan games, which is what's going on way too much, especially in the House of Representatives.
Well, and especially over the last 2 years, because look, the 2 years before, Democrats had control with a very slim majority. And then during this 2 year Congress, Republicans have control again by an extremely slim majority. But how do you describe to people the differences between how Democrats controlled Congress with a slim majority versus the past 2 years with Republican control? Seems to be a study in contrast there, Peter.
Well, you know, it's been disastrous, quite frankly. I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, you know, obviously the different wings of their party, you know, are not even working together, much less working across the aisle. So the consequence, you know, they remove one speaker. You've got threats every day to remove the new speaker because he, because of just bringing forward bills that are necessary. And nonetheless, hundreds and hundreds of bills that the Senate have passed, you know, sit there and they don't even take them up. They don't even give them a vote. It's unbelievable. I mean, I would say the border deal is one that just makes my blood boil because it's so clear that, you know, we've got a serious problem on the border. And there was a bipartisan deal put together in the Senate with, you know, James Langton, a, you know, very conservative Republican from Oklahoma, an independent Kristen Sinema from Arizona, and a Democrat, Chris Murphy from Connecticut. And, you know, it would easily pass, probably pass the House by 2/3 vote. But because they apparently would like to have, you know, a talking point during their election, I mean, it's just so cynical. It's just, you know, terrible. I mean, you know, they talk about the problem, but they won't actually roll up their sleeves and get something done. And it, you know, the idea is you would wait another year of having fentanyl brought forward. We have seven families that are close to us who have lost people due to fentanyl and the problems that we have. And yet they say, well, no, you have to pass only our bill, the Republican bill. Well, anytime you have, you know, government of both parties controlling the Congress, you've got to work together and nothing gets done. And this is a perfect example of a bill that could pass tomorrow, should pass tomorrow. And there's absolutely nothing being done. But it's issue after issue after issue. When the Democrats were in control of all branches, they passed a bipartisan infrastructure bill. And people of goodwill, you had Democrats and Republicans vote for it, but Brian Stout wasn't one of them. when they passed the CHIPS Act. The CHIPS Act is an enormously important bill because if we mix it up with China, 85% of our chips come from Taiwan. That would bring our nation to its knees. So it's so vitally important that, you know, that they got this done, which they did. Again, Democrats and Republicans, but Brian Stile wasn't one of them. So whenever there have been bipartisan deals of any consequence, you know, they did at least pass in the last Congress. You know, my opponent did not vote for them. And now they're completely strangulated with playing partisan games and just not getting the job done.
And you're saying that about Congress, but it could just as easily be said about the legislature, where you served as Assembly Democratic leader for a time. And so you've known over the past 12 years of Republican control of the legislature, you know, what it's like to deal with a majority that doesn't look at the minority and say, well, you know, can we work together on some things, but looks to essentially shut you out of the process. Now that Wisconsin has fair maps, how do you think voters are going to treat that, and ultimately how they're going to decide seats for the legislature and Congress based on what they've seen over the past decade?
Well, that's why fair maps are so essential. These past couple of years especially, but we did work together in the state legislature. We passed dozens of bills at the Department of Revenue and working with the Republican-controlled legislature. I do think that fair maps had something to do with it, but at least, you know, there's constructive conversations that went on. We discussed the issues, and at least we brought them forward and passed them. But that's why fair maps make a big difference. And this district has changed. It used to be a lean, heavily Republican by 6 points, 7 points. Now it's essentially a 50-50 district. Governor Evers essentially tied here. He lost by just a few hundred votes here. Justice Protasiewicz won by 6.5%. So it's a district that's trending more Democratic. It is a 50-50 district, but you know, my opponent votes as if he's got an 80% seat because he decides to vote on bipartisan bills that are vitally important for this country and for the state of Wisconsin.
You know, there has been an effort by Representative Stile and by Mike Gallagher before that to appear to be the moderate members of the state's congressional delegation. Mike Gallagher realized he couldn't continue that bit of political theater anymore, looking at how the House has been composed and the things that they're trying to do. Where does Brian Stile fit into this? Is he as much a part of the problem as the louder members of his caucus, the Marjorie Taylor Greens and things, or does he have a case to make that he's actually the moderate Republican among Wisconsin's congressional delegation?
Well, I don't think his voting record suggests that at all. In fact, as I indicated on some of those votes, and I could tell more, he in fact votes with the more extreme members of his caucus. He may be able to articulate a message, but when you look at, and as my grandmother used to tell me, Peter, don't listen to what people say, watch what they do. And when you watch what he does, he's someone that, advocates on the extreme element of his party. In fact, he was one of the people that helped write an amicus brief to repeal Roe v. Wade. So as opposed to, there's a bill up now to protect in vitro fertilization. That's one of the ways we were able to have a grandchild. It's something that I worked on from the first day I was elected with back then Representative Goldschmidt, who was a champion of that bill. He could sign onto that, onto the bill that's sitting there, but he chooses not to. Instead, he's been someone that has, worked to take away women's health care decisions. And, all of the other items that I brought up that are significant items that are important to Wisconsin, he's not even voting with his own party when you have a bipartisan bill in those consequential items.
I wonder what your thought is on him as chair of a particular administrative committee, which now admittedly, this is not part of the kitchen table issues that most voters will be thinking about, but he does have a role to play, for example, in, how the Capitol is administrated, how the investigation has gone into the January 6th insurrection and attack, and even the late night outburst by fellow Congressman Derek Van Orden late one night in the Capitol, letting loose on some Senate pages who were minding their own business. Does Representative Stile give the impression that he's been less than forthcoming in his duties as committee chair?
Well, it's ironic you should bring that up, because actually there was an article by Liz Cheney where she was asked in a very detailed interview if she had ever worked against members of her own party. And she said, yes, for those that, you know, are not supporting democracy, for those that are taking more of an extreme position, she would. She cited two examples of, she said that so often people who have replaced their predecessors are just more extreme. She cited two examples. One of them was Brian Stile. And that's one of the examples you bring up, is that people are saying he hasn't released records in regard to the situation at the Capitol, where one of his, you know, colleagues was in fact, you know, using incendiary language against, you know, Senate interns, for goodness sakes. But also even in the January 6th, as I understand, based on that article, he didn't release documents that were requested there. So, you know, once again, that's taken a very extreme approach to things. And you know, especially in Wisconsin. Wisconsin has been a state that has always believed in transparency, open government. And so it's ironic that he is not practicing that at all.
And then finally, let's talk about the district itself in terms of, you know, how much it is similar to the full state in what I would call its purpleness. You know, and you've mentioned this a couple of minutes earlier, but, you know, we're going to have President Biden and former President Trump on the ballot. You're going to have Tammy Baldwin on the ballot. You're going to have you on the ballot from a congressional standpoint. Do you feel like there's going to be some split ticket voting going on here? Or are you making the case that folks are going to be very much supportive of Democrats come November?
Well, it is a purple district. There's no doubt about it. In fact, it does reflect some of the best of Wisconsin. You've got rural areas, you've got farming areas, you've got urban areas, towns, villages. And that's one thing I'm very proud of. Within a few days of my announcement, we had 26 different officials from, you know, across the district and some across the state, you know, mayors, village officials that endorsed my candidacy. They told me that, you know, when they contact the congressman's office, that, you know, they sometimes don't even get a call back, but they certainly have not gotten any results.
Well, and then that's what I think they would expect otherwise from you, knowing your record already. Peter Barca is running for Congress in the 1st District. Peter, appreciate your time. Thank you so much. We'll check in with you again soon.
Yeah, great talking to you. Appreciate it very much, Pat. Thanks for keeping
all right, James.
Support.
Did you know that if you have one of those smart speakers, you can play your favorite Civic Media radio station just by saying play and the station name? For example, play WRJN or play Bull Falls Radio. Set up your smart speaker that way and you will not miss any one of your favorite shows on one of your favorite stations. If you're listening on 93.5 The Tap here in Chippewa Falls or other stations nearby, you might frequently hear the voice of our next guest, Civic Media reporter James Kelly, who's pinch hitting for Terry Bell, who normally gives us three things you need to know to start the week. But we thought we'd better do a good job of getting around and talking to the other members of Terry's team and find out more about the stories they're working on each part of the state. So I'm starting to hear good and local. James, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. It's nice to be back after such a long break from the show.
You're welcome anytime here, and it's nice to have you from the spacious headquarters of WCFW, which is now in downtown Chippewa Falls, above the old Kinsella Drug there on Bridge and Grand. And you're there covering a large chunk of Wisconsin. As we get into some of the stories that you've been covering lately, it seems pretty automatic to start with Northland College, which continues to be a big old question mark. There's a lot of uncertainty there. And I'm sure every time you're checking in with folks there, they're just continuing to feel like they're on pins and needles.
Oh, yeah. And especially the students and faculty more so than even the administration. You know, they have the inside track. They know what's going on. They know how much money they've raised since they've started this fundraising effort. They know how much money they need to cut. But it's really the students who are kind of sitting there week after week saying, well, you guys told us you were going to make a decision this week, and it's once again been postponed. So, you know, we're running out of time to make plans for next year.
And that's the thing. If people are going to transfer, if they're students or if they're faculty and they want to look for a new job, this is really eating into, you know, the calendar in terms of what they were going to do. Not to mention the I think people are still waiting for what approach are they going to take. And what I mean by that is there's been talk about cutting the curriculum way back and cutting the student body size way back and trying to make it as a much smaller school. And others are saying, no, the way you've got to do this is to grow things a little bit, attract more people who will, you know, maybe take these particular majors and then become donors when they graduate. Now, I'm not saying one answer is right or wrong. I'm just saying this is, some of the many questions that they face with a very difficult circumstance up there.
Yeah, and I think this week there's maybe a little more hope around the situation. I know last week when we spoke, it was supposed to be the day of the decision, or they were going to say, once and for all, are we staying open or are we not staying open? Over the last week, though, they say they've gotten some transformative donations that change what they can do. Whether it's not going to reach that 12 million mark that they were hoping for, as of yet, you know, there's donations still coming in, and they have till the end of the week. This week is when they set their new decision to make. But as it stands right now, there's a little bit of hope that between the plan that's been advanced through the faculty council, which would include cutting some programs, laying off some teachers, and the recent donations that they've gotten over the last week, they're starting to have a little bit of hope that they may remain open as far as, you know, just keeping the school open. That doesn't speak to what about the students who are part of those programs. You know, now they have to transfer to another school, and that's going to be a whole hassle on its own. And, you know, they are running out of time to do it. College takes transfers on rolling admissions. So the faster you get in, the better chance you have of getting into a different college.
That's right. Yeah. So I'm very fortunate in working with two different amazing entities, with the Civic Media Radio Network and with Up North News, part of Courier Newsroom. And so I get to watch these two different newsrooms follow stories every day. From the Civic Media side, there's always a daily rundown of what all the various reporters are working on. And I always feel like we gave you guys short shrift because there's only so much time for newscasts and news stories. So I thought it would be good for you to take some time and tell us, you know, what are the kinds of stories you're following, either big stories or stories that, you know, are taking weeks, maybe months to tell. So apart from the big things like the Northland College story, what else have you been working on lately?
Oh, well, there was a report earlier last week, towards the end of the week, actually, that Gunderson Health System is considering kind of expanding into the Chippewa Valley. Obviously, you know, HSHS and Prevea are essentially gone now. The only places left are really clinics that are contractually obligated to stay open until June. But the hospitals are done. Most of the clinics are done. So you're looking at other medical providers in the area who are starting to open up new clinics here. Oakleaf Medical Network just opened one. And they're starting to expand their service there. So that's always something to follow. Starting to get into road work, construction season, a lot of big projects going on in the area. One big project is not road work dependent. Out in Altoona, they're testing out this new sediment collector because of the sediment that comes in along the Eau Claire River is pretty harmful to the wildlife that's in the area of the of Altoona. So they're bringing in this 30-foot-long sediment collector. They tested a 10-foot one earlier this year, and it was really productive. So that's a pretty interesting project that's going on as well.
It's funny, though, because that one, you know, the dam that forms Lake Altoona is one of those that, again, whether it's, natural resources experts or others would say that it's not fully necessary. I know that over the past, 20, 30 years or so, there's been this move to, remove dams that are no longer needed for, say, generating power and, return, the river to its natural channels. But sometimes there's people, they really want to keep, the body of water that's formed. I think in Bloomer, they had to build a new dam and they had to, fundraise for it because, again, the state wasn't going to pay for all of it since it wasn't really needed anymore. Lake Altoona has really had that problem with all that sediment that comes in and, monkeys with the lake, people don't want to lose the lake either. So, I mean, this community has faced years of looking for just the right way to hold on to their lake without causing, damage to the natural resources around it.
Yeah, and there's hope that this is the way. You know, the 10-foot smaller version of the sediment collector worked. It worked pretty well. so they feel comfortable using the 30-foot sediment collector, which is just absolutely massive.
I bet. It's just so many things that they have to work on there. So for that story and much more, James Kelly follows it for Civic Media out of Chippewa Falls, part of a very full news team with Terry Bell and others. James, thanks for giving us a little update on a couple of the stories you're working on, and we'll talk again real soon.
Absolutely. Anytime, Pat.
All right. Thank you. Now, we've got a busy week ahead here coming up tomorrow. Hans Breitenmoser is going to join us, and we're going to talk about the House Republicans in Washington have put out a budget blueprint, and it would have quite a negative impact on rural America, which is odd since it's rural America that has typically been voting Republican for the past couple of decades. And we'll see if really that's a good course of action for them or not. On Wednesday, we will talk about the ongoing teacher shortage in Wisconsin, what's caused it, and whether there are things that can be done yet to try to increase the ranks of teachers coming into Wisconsin. We have our Women Win Wisconsin segment on Thursday. And of course, former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel joins us on Friday to tell us what all is happening from a very busy week, I'm sure, will be again for the trial of Donald Trump, all happening throughout the course of this week. So thanks again for joining us. Up North News is the Wisconsin outlet for Courier, a pro-democracy news network building a more informed, engaged, and representative America. Thanks for being